You're listening to the Hustle Inspires Hustle podcast. Here, we'll help you unlock the secrets of entrepreneurship and self-development. This is your host, Alex Quinn. I'm a full-stack marketing executive and global keynote speaker. Get ready to get real-world knowledge from top-level entrepreneurs and world-class business leaders.
What's up, everyone? I'm Chris Voss.
Yo, this is Grant Cardone.
What's up, guys? This is Ezra Firestone, and you're listening to Hustle Inspires Hustle, the podcast.
What's up, y'all? I'm Alex Quinn, and we're back with another episode of the Hustle Inspires Hustle podcast. On today's episode, we have Andrew Southworth. What's up, Andrew?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Hey, man, I was just giving you some props about your setup before we started rolling. I love that background.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, this is like, you know, decade plus of gear collection and sound design obsession.
It looks like you're doing some real shit back there, man. That looks like some legitimate stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like this thing here, this... So a lot of people ask if it's like, this is like a green screen, or this is just fake or something, but like...
That's a compliment.
Yeah. And like this synthesizer here, it's a modular synth. It's like you build it piece by piece and it's like 20 grand or something. Like it's crazy expensive, but it's super fun.
So you love all this stuff. You love music. You love marketing. Let's talk a little bit about what you do and your passions, man.
Yeah. So a lot of people know me from my YouTube channel, which is just my name, Andrew Southworth, where I share essentially how I'm marketing my music and how I'm navigating the music industry as a music artist. So I also release music under my own name. I got like 12,000 followers on Spotify and like 30,000 monthly listeners. I've sold like hundreds of CDs, you know, so I'm like an active artist. And nice. On my YouTube channel, at least what people tell me is the reason why they like me over the alternatives in the space is that I'm actually a music artist. And whereas a lot of people teaching music marketing in particular, they're not in the weeds as an artist themselves. They're just people who are more on the marketing side dealing with music marketing. So
it's actually pretty dope, pretty rad that you're doing both. A lot of people don't take the time to understand. And, you know, when people think music, it's like, oh, I hear a song, I see a music video, done. No, not done. A lot of things. Publicists, running paid ads, split sheets, contracts, distribution, ASCAP, BMI, all the words and possible bells and whistles that come with music. It's good to be a well-rounded individual in whatever industry you're working with and working on. In this case, you're a music artist, but you're also a professional marketer, professional content creator. You know, all these things that you've kind of become an expert on throughout the years allow you to continue to scale your artistry, which you're seeing it. You know, you got your numbers up, you're moving up. People know you not only for music, but also for marketing. So they respect the fact that you're able to back that up. I really appreciate that a lot because, you know, when I'm browsing, that's how I found you. I found you on YouTube. I was browsing online, music marketing, seeing who's in the mix, seeing who's posting videos, what kind of stuff is out there. And I saw how much effort you put into it. And then I saw your music. And I brought it to Michelle. I'm like, I didn't bring it to Michelle. Michelle found you herself. So shout out to Michelle. Michelle found you herself. And then you ended up helping us out at the agency with some consulting. That's pretty dope, man. You're a well-rounded musician, businessman.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, a lot of artists think when they get into music that, and someone commented on one of my videos today, and I'm going to pretty much just quote them. The person said, what people think I do as a musician, and it's like, make music. What I actually do as a musician, post on social media every day, learn how to edit videos, learn Blender to make graphic arts, learn how to use Facebook ads, learn how to use YouTube ads, you know, and that's kind of the reality that modern musicians have to deal with is like, you can be just a musician, but then you need a team, right? And
right.
That costs money. And if you don't have like capital to go hire people, or you don't have enough buzz where someone will work on commission, or you're signed to a label, you have to learn how to do all this stuff yourself.
So how did this all start for you? Like, did you always know you wanted to be an artist?
Yeah, I mean, at least since I was like 12 years old when I started learning how to play guitar. that was kind of when the addiction started. And, you know, I took it seriously when I was a teenager in terms of being learning my craft and being a writer and composer and guitar player and vocalist. But I didn't take the marketing or business side of things remotely seriously until I think 2019 was when I really started like actually trying to get the word out. Prior to that, yeah. I was just like make music and throw it up on YouTube. And I didn't even have it on Spotify until 2018, even though I've been making music for, you know, now it's like 18 years. And so that's when the marketing push started, and it was essentially just trial and error. You know, Google how to market your own music for free, and then you try posting on social media, and then it goes badly, and then you try hiring some random person on Fiverr, and it goes really badly. And, you know, I just kept trying things and failing. And then eventually you find some stuff that works, and you just keep trying to make it work better.
Your main passion is the music. Even though you're passionate about marketing, if you had to choose one versus the other, you'd probably go down the music route full force, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, almost definitely. I mean, it'd be hard for me to just like give one up, because I'm, you know, just like everyone likes a lot of things. Like, you know, obviously you have this podcast, and you have your agency, and, you know, I'm sure you have a bunch of other things you love doing, and it'd be hard to give one up. But if I had to pick one, I'd rather do music for the rest of my life than do marketing.
They're always going to go hand in hand with you, specifically because the most successful music artists learn how the business works. And at the same time that they're making money from their current and past music, they're able to make money with new projects, new artists, new endeavors. So it's really good that you have those two skill sets, because you will grow as an artist naturally, and you will do well, right? You'll be successful, but you will also keep an eye out on the horizon for any opportunity, and anything you may have learned during your marketing push, during your business push, all of that is going to play a key role in how you build that wealth in these industries.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So who inspired you to, like, who are those people that inspired you to become a musician? Like, what genre was it?
Well, originally, most of my music history was in like metal, and specifically like progressive metal. And I didn't start doing the whole electronic pop music thing until 2018. Everything before that was metal, maybe some rock. And so, you know, so I was very big into like Dream Theater and, you know, John Petrucci, the guitarist of that band, and Steve Vai and Joe Satriani, all these like legendary guitar players. And then at some point I started enjoying electronic music, and that was like 2017 or something. And I started trying to make it myself.
That's fantastic. I love electronic music. Michelle loves electronic music too. I don't know if you guys got a chance to talk about that on the last few calls you guys had together, but she's totally into that. She's handling a lot. So we own a magazine. We have an in-house magazine at the agency called Contrast Magazine. And she's actually doing a lot of the pieces for the electronic artists now. And she does she's doing the meet and greets. She's going to, you know, to the events. She's doing the write-ups. So it's a dope world, man.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy that you guys have an internal magazine. That sounds like a ton of work. Like I know a lot of people who have blogs or whatever, and it's a lot of people don't realize that like running a blog is like a full-time job.
You know? Oh yeah, man. Well, these days everybody makes, you know, you see things online, they may look simple to do, but the whole back mechanism of how to do everything is pretty sophisticated. But, and once you've built enough businesses, once you've had enough experience working on different types of projects, it's much easier to be able to create systems and processes to be able to operate faster, training manuals, you know, SOPs, tutorials, all those things help you work much faster. But yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's very rewarding.
Yeah.
And it plays right into the music scene, which is great that we're having this conversation, because it all kind of like blends together, you know?
Right. Because if you're doing, you know, agency services for an artist, if you have a platform, you can interview them. And that's a pretty sweet kind of plus one that you can do. And then also probably allows you to meet new people that you might just be having there for the magazine. And then they might end up moving on to use your agency at some point.
Exactly. Or agency clients want to advertise in the magazine, vice versa. Yeah. But, you know, when you grow businesses, it's good to grow in areas that, you know, are that directly or indirectly help your existing business. You know, some people go completely left field and start something else, which is totally fine. But I like to build legs around things I know already working to continue to create solutions for the people working with me or working for me.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've been trying to do. Like originally when I was doing the music marketing stuff, I already had a YouTube channel at that point. Like I was teaching screaming lessons for years, and I switched to music production tutorials. And then my channel was always just, I would talk about whatever I was doing in my life at that time, whatever I wanted to teach. And then, So when I was getting into the marketing, I started talking about the marketing, and then eventually it started doing so much better. The demand was there. So I was just like, okay, I'm going to double down on this. And then eventually, like I had no plan on really monetizing it outside of YouTube ad revenue originally. And even that, you know that YouTube AdSense is not, like, for most businesses, the YouTube ad revenue is the smallest portion of that business. And that's
right.
That's true for me as well, pretty much. And So that was kind of originally it. And then eventually people said, hey, can you hop in a, could I book you for a call? I could pay you. And so, you know, just to look at my ads or kind of help me out. And I was like, okay, cool. And then I'd send them the price. We'd hop on like Google Meets or whatever and do it one by one. And then eventually enough people asked where I made like a calendar and I set a price. And then it was kind of, I was just consistently flat out booked. And then, you know, you kind of raise your prices to meet with demand. And then also people started asking me for courses. I was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. But that makes sense. There's like a billion courses out there that instead of people wanting to book my time for like, let's say an hour, and a lot of problems can't be solved in 1 hour too. Like instead of having to book multiple hours of my time, if they can just buy a course. And then, so then I started making a course, and then that was my Spotify Growth Machine course, which was like how to use Facebook ads to promote music on Spotify. And then people were like, well, what about YouTube ads? Like, oh, okay. Well, I'll make a course about that. And then, you know, so it's just kind of over time, thing people started asking for things, then I would deliver them. And then over time, I would get a little more systematic with what things I'm going to do, like what aspect of my business could I create that would further help and kind of feed back into all the other elements of my business. Like running ads for people is not something I do a ton, but it's something I do. And then I'll do more kind of long-term packages with people. And then some people get my courses and the consulting, and I do some ads for them. And, you know, I try to make this kind of thing where someone likes what I do. There's like an ecosystem of things that are all like related and for that person, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's very similar to what you were just saying now about how my agency and my magazine feed each other business, you know, potentially you working on somebody's ads, maybe an artist in the electronic music space could potentially be a collaborator for one of your projects. So it's really cool how you've taken advantage of all of these opportunities and kind of made them all work together. You know, it's all based around the same thing, all based around the same principles, but it all allows you to use your time wisely, efficiently from your studio where you are right now. I'm guessing for the most part, right? You could record there. You could have writing sessions there. You could have Zoom calls for consulting. You check your Facebook ads, YouTube ads. I mean, all you really need is your space.
16 hours a day in this room, pretty much.
Yeah,
like I sleep in the bedroom, and I pretty much, aside from dinner and social things, I like live in this studio that I have.
There's this book. I don't know if you've read it. I recently bought it on Amazon. I think I've mentioned it on a few episodes. It's called Music Marketing by, I think, Mike King. Recently bought into that. Yeah, it's pretty badass, man. There's a lot of great stuff in there, specifically stuff about how stores used to work before when they sold CDs. It has a lot of how the old school stuff worked, but it kind of puts things into perspective about how things were before and how they are now. And it also touches on the internet and everything else. So definitely recommended.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. What was it called again?
Music Marketing. I believe it's by Mike King. It's a white book with red letters. You should find it on Amazon.
Cool. Yeah, the only like book I've gotten in the music, because music marketing is tricky if you try to cover anything. It'd be like, imagine writing a book about Facebook ads. It would be out of date in like a month, you know?
But
the Ari Herstand book, I forget what it's called, but is like really good. And this kind of covers like evergreen concepts and marketing and branding and stuff like that. And then also Jesse Cannon, I did an interview. He's like he's had a blog called Museformation, and now he has a YouTube channel for it. And I interviewed him, and he mentioned his books. I was like, oh, I'll buy your books. He's like, nah, I'll send you a book. And so he also has a really cool one that's pretty evergreen as well.
All right, y'all. We're going to link that in the show notes. So make sure to check it out. Music marketing and everything else we talk about on this episode, be able to find it on our website, hustleinspireshustle.com/podcast, or on the show notes of whatever app you're listening to right now. Andrew, I have a question for you, man. Pretty general question, but allow us to get deeper into the topic. How can a music artist market their song or album today? Specifically from your experience online, Facebook ads, Instagram ads, YouTube ads, what's currently working for artists?
Yeah, a lot of that will depend on what their current situation is and what their budget is. But like as a general answer, what I've seen work best and what works best for me and what I've seen work best for others is, well, it's kind of goal dependent. If you want to grow your streams on Spotify, Apple Music, et cetera, then Facebook conversion ads, where you send people to a landing page, kind of like a Linktree, but don't use Linktree, something like Feature FM or ToneDen or Hyped or Linkfire or whatever. You use Facebook ads, run a conversion campaign, send people to that page and track when people click to go to the certain streaming platform. And I found that for promoting streaming to be like by far the best way in terms of like long-term results that actually matter. Because you can also go the Spotify playlisting route, where there's on one hand, there's services like SubmitHub and Playlist Push and Groover and Muso Soup. And then there's also companies like, well, I don't want to name some names because I'm about to say bad things about them. But there's companies you can hire where you give them a lot of cash, they put you on a bunch of playlists. It's like a guaranteed thing. And then there's also people who you can email, and essentially it's like, do you want to add my song to your playlist? Sure, we'll add it for $100. And like that level is like completely against Spotify's terms of service, but it happens and it's super common. And so that's the playlisting route. And like the playlisting is the cheapest cost per stream. Like if you were to calculate like total marketing budget for playlisting, divide the number of streams through it, it would be the cheapest cost per stream,
right?
At least in the short term. But what happens is you're on the playlist for like a month or whatever the term is, and then you're essentially back to square one. You'll have almost no song saves, almost no playlist ads, almost no follower growth, and you probably won't get an algorithmic playlist on Spotify, like Discover Weekly, Release Radar, Daily Mix. The ads are more expensive on a per stream basis short term, but long term, they do like a like order of magnitude better in terms of getting saves, getting followers, keeping like a stable amount of monthly listeners. Whereas the playlist, if you see the graph on Spotify for artists, if someone uses playlists, it's like literally up, it's like a square wave, up, down, up, down. If you look at someone who's been using Facebook ads consistently over time, there's still ups and downs, but it's not so like up, down. It's more of like
more of a bell curve.
Yeah. It's kind of like just a consistent growth with little bit of waviness up and down depending on how songs perform, stuff like that.
So for Facebook ads, what you're sending them to a Linktree style landing page and tracking conversions. Typically the people that take those actions, how are you following up with them on retargeting?
So it
merge, or I mean, I'm sure there's many answers to that, but
yeah, so it of course it depends, but one way is to retarget, like you can make a custom audience in Facebook to retarget anything, right? So you can retarget people who convert, and you could retarget them when you drop your next song to have them check out your next song. You could also retarget them with an email opt-in, give them some cool bribe. Some people do a free download, but I think that's kind of lame in 2022. Some kind of like my email list thing is like, join my email list, you get this exclusive 8-day experience of unreleased videos, free song downloads, phone wallpapers, story breakdowns. So it's like this exclusive vault of content, and that's my bribe to get people on my email list.
Right.
So that's like another thing you can retarget people, or merch. And the merch thing is hard. It works much better for larger artists if they have a much bigger retargeting pool.
Right. But
there was one particular artist that I did consulting for, and we did the whole Spotify thing, but they already had like 4 million monthly listeners. So, and they were signed to a label. So that was just kind of a side thing. We did a couple calls just for like merch promotion. So they ran a Halloween sale, and it was going to be like this exclusive Halloween merch being sold for like 4 days only. And so we did a retargeting campaign, retargeting all of their conversions, their Instagram engagers, people who watched more than 15 seconds of a bunch of videos. And I think they spent, well, I forget what they spent. I think it was $1,000, but the ROAS, the return on ad spend, was like a 7.
Nice.
So they spent like $1,000 and made $7,000 in like a 4-day period for their Halloween sale. And so, you know, there's a lot of ways you can retarget, but those are kind of the common ones. Like people who checked out old songs, check out new songs. People who checked out old songs, just kind of warm up to the artist, like see other content or join a mailing list or buy something, you know?
Yeah. You could also share, like, for when there's events or clubs, like clubs hire them, they could also do like share their audience to whatever venue and, you know, run ads to that and make sure that they have a good turnout.
Yeah, I've been doing a decent amount of event ads recently just because a few clients in the same period wanted to know how to promote their tour or their shows. And that's also really good for retargeting. You know, you can retarget the address of the venue you're playing and put like a 20-mile radius around it, retarget all your fans who live in that little bubble and promote the show. And you can either get them to RSVP on with a Facebook event, or you could just do a traffic campaign to the Ticketmaster page, whatever it is.
Hey, I just wanted to jump in real quick to tell you about how to train yourself in organization, balancing your priorities, developing successful habits, and most importantly, having a better mindset. I'm giving free access to resources and materials on business management and self-development. Go to hustleinspireshustle.com/app to get access. That's hustleinspireshustle.com/app. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter at Hustle Inspires Hustle. Okay, let's get back into the episode.
You've seen the traffic campaigns work better when sending them to Ticketmaster or any of the other event platforms?
You can't put a pixel on the event platforms, and you have no like verification. So that's essentially the best we could do. But that's why when I do a traffic campaign, it's pretty much always only for retargeting.
Has Eventbrite removed the pixel capabilities? I was almost sure that Eventbrite had it, but I may be wrong. Eventbrite
probably has it, but it kind of depends on whatever the venue is using.
Yeah, what they're using, whatever ticketing software or platform they're using.
Some of them are really cool from what I've experienced, where they'll let you put like a pixel on your ticketing page. Others will give you like daily reporting on sales, and others will have a platform that the artist kind of has a front-facing portal for.
So let me ask you something. Let's say I'm an artist. Right now, I could only advertise on one social media platform. Where would you send me? Where would you direct me if it was you? Like if it was your project that you're leading?
It would be Facebook ads. But
Facebook ads.
Be Facebook and Instagram, but run through the Meta ads platform.
Okay. To a Linktree style page which is kind of talking the campaign that we're running. Like that's where you would start.
Yeah, like that's a lot of people ask me like, oh, TikTok ads, Snapchat ads, YouTube ads. And like YouTube ads, definitely great, especially if you're promoting a music video. It's like by far the best way to do it.
Yeah.
But when you're trying to send people to another platform, I found Google ads and YouTube ads aren't nearly as good as the Facebook ads. TikTok ads can work for that kind of application, and Snapchat ads can work, but I haven't found it works nearly as good as Facebook and Instagram. And I think that largely has to do with Facebook's much more robust set of targeting options and also the user base. I mean, TikTok has a huge user base, but the ad platform's incredibly new and the targeting sucks. Like
It's not the same.
You used to not even be able to target by genre. And now I don't even think they have rock music. They have like hip hop and EDM, but they don't have rock, and don't even bother looking for a band. Like you can do hashtags, but they don't have every hashtag. And I feel like a year from now, I might be saying TikTok is the answer, because they're like accelerating their platform so fast.
Yeah. You know when it's going to get interesting? When you and me and everybody in this industry are serving up ads inside these headsets, and there's virtual concerts going on, and you see the billboards, and you're placing engagement ads on those billboards, and if they got views because they're tracking the headset movement, then you could retarget them at a later time or sell them access to, I don't know, to a club inside the metaverse in which the artist is going to be meeting. He's going to be doing meet and greets, and it's going to be insane. I'm excited for all that shit.
As much as like Facebook is kind of an evil platform and like how it's run and what they do, it's such a great ad platform. And the whole metaverse thing, there's questionable aspects about it and how it's going to go, but it's 1,000%. Super cool. And I would love if it, like from a marketing side, if Facebook is like the owner of this metaverse that we're creating, because they're going to give us a billion new advertising placements. And there's probably going to be like a land grab right at the start for who can grow these platforms and market in these platforms. Is going to be super cheap at first, just like when they originally added like the Instagram and story placements. It was like really, really good at first, and then the competition shoots the roof, and now it's just like every other placement.
Right. I love where all this is going. There's definitely a lot of things to be mindful of. There's good and bad. I think everything in moderation is good. But it's good to look ahead and think ahead to see how artists, how brands, how marketers, how managers, how anybody in the industry is going to adjust to all these changes. Because not only do I see them happening, I see them happening very fast. And people that look away and don't realize that second they looked away, that they just, things that they were just using became completely obsolete. That's going to be an eye opener for a lot of people. And it's going to shave off a lot of competition. And it's going to allow for the people that really know what's going on and have been paying attention to be able to rise to the top and take advantage of that first mover's advantage.
Totally. Yeah. This is kind of a bad example, but it's similar. The whole music NFT thing, or even just NFTs in general, right? That came and gone so fast in terms of like public appeal. it's been around for years, right? NFTs and stuff, but like it was like 2021 to early 2022. There were a bunch of people who jumped in and cashed out, and now like the world just like hates NFTs. I mean, there's plenty of people that do it, but you know, it's things happen fast.
It's ahead of its time, I believe, in a sense. Well, why do I say that? Because you can have an NFT campaign, you can launch an NFT campaign, but I believe the success of any NFT campaign is the culture and the follow-up. A lot of these artists are just, you know, doing cash grabs. And these NFTs should have utility, right? You buy an NFT, you get access to this, but maybe you get access to a private Discord server, or you get a special pass every time you go to a concert for that artist, or maybe you get put on the split sheet and you could get some like rights to the song and get your royal. I don't know. I'm just coming up with different things, right? But if you keep people engaged in a way where they're like, hey, shit, I'm missing out because I'm not even buying into this, but look what all my friends are doing. Then it becomes something really tangible and becomes something that creates FOMO, something that has value, something that has demand. Therefore, you can keep showing it off. Why do I think it's maybe ahead of its time? Because we have nowhere to show them off, really. Augmented reality glasses are on the way. You know, you might be able to show them off in that way. Maybe all your friends are wearing augmented reality glasses. You're all looking at the same thing. You could pop your NFT into everybody's glasses. Everybody sees what you have, pops out. Maybe virtual reality. You could show it off in like a digital museum, you know, or maybe watches in the future, the Apple Watch in the future, you're going to be able to like hologram your NFT out and like show your, I don't know. We have no way of really showing it besides showing a JPEG and looking like a total idiot, because the JPEG could be a screenshot, which is a lot of people's argument. So I believe that there's still a lot of development to be made before these NFT music projects actually like go into fruition and actually start working the way they're supposed to.
That's a really good point. And that's something I've thought of too, where the NFT, like the technology is really cool. Now you can do a lot of stuff with it. It's just that like the implementation that is popular now is like buy this video file. It's like, why would I buy this video file? It's like, I don't know. You'll own it. Cool. But but then, you know, but you're right. Like there was a cool platform that came out where it was kind of like Patreon. Uh-huh. You would buy, like you buy into this Patreon for like a one-time NFT purchase.
Right.
You could sell that later, right? It's just an NFT. And then the artist, the seller of that would get like a little commission off that sale. And
right.
And of course, if you sold only 100 tickets into that vault, I think the platform was called Vault. That's like a really cool application of that. And that's just like, I'd say probably scratching the surface, and concert tickets or the thing you just mentioned. You're right, with like augmented reality, virtual reality becoming more popular. And people buy video game skins all the time. So it's like, if virtual reality and augmented reality, that's probably true. It's probably going to come back at some point and be less lame than it is now.
Yeah, I think a lot of creators are going to have a really good opportunity to make some solid money when it comes to those skins in the metaverse and like outfits and things like that. Because for example, if we're in the metaverse right now, I'm looking at you, you're looking at me. You could probably choose for me to see a different outfit on you right now. That's pretty sick. I mean, Giphy is doing some incredible things. I don't know if you've taken a look into them, but I mean, I was speaking to one of my business partners this week, and he was telling me he read somewhere online that I think Giphy is either the second or third largest search engine in the world right now. From how many people are looking at these GIFs on all the platforms, because if you notice, they have integrations with almost all the platforms. And so you could create, I mean, they have video games in there, they have stickers, they have all types of stuff. And I just, you know, see a day, one day, maybe potentially you go into your Oculus, right? And you're walking down this metaverse where everybody has land or whatever they're all building, right? And you just choose to buy a skin to see how it is that you're going to look. Maybe during that same walk that you're having and people are seeing you wear a certain outfit, in the ambiance, there's music playing. And maybe that could be a music placement from an app platform. There could be a guy like you, like doing the ads to everybody walking down that street. Like, all right, let's play them this music. Let's make sure this is up on the billboard. Let's make sure like this is on, you know, there's going to be all types of crazy things going on. And we're going to have the ability to potentially even load a sticker from Giphy or load a something from Giphy that people are seeing on every other platform. And then NFT that, like, there's so much to be done. And I think that digital marketers, music marketers, everybody alike in the industry has to do a lot of studying and understanding the fundamentals of how all of these things work, the tokenization of a lot of these projects, the utility of a lot of these projects, being compliant as well, because there's a lot of people that are just launching crazy projects and don't understand the complexity of compliance in different areas, be it the advertising platform or being it federal compliance. We have a lot of work to do. There's a lot of books to be written. There's a lot of podcasts to be recorded. But I think that what we're doing now, you, me, everybody in this industry, there's a lot of promise to it. And I don't think any of us are wasting our time, our efforts, or our energy learning into this, because we're seeing the fruits of it already. It's scaled massively, specifically since 2020. Like, the music industry has grown in so many directions. The entertainment industry has grown in so many directions. There was a small pause during all that time, but now you're seeing concert tickets cost triple, quadruple, five times what they cost before for the same exact thing, which is allowing for a lot more development. We recently had somebody on the podcast where we talked about a software that he has. I can't recall, but we'll make sure to put it on the show notes. But it's for artist management teams to be able to work off the software for touring. So every time that you have a tour, you're an artist, you have your manager, you have publicists, you have your dancers, everybody, all those people need to travel. You need to book hotels for all those people. You need their IDs. You need their passports. You need all of their personal potential info. You need credit cards. This software helps them keep track of the entire touring system to be able to book whatever it is that they need to do, keep track of everything that's going on, and be able to have everything smoothly running. So we're going to have an opportunity for new industries to be created, new apps and softwares to be created, new marketing opportunities, new books, new podcasts to be created. I'm very excited to see where all of this is going. I feel like I'm right in the middle of it right now, and I'm just soaking it all in to be able to be ready and take that first move once, you know, things start really popping off.
Yeah, totally. This is like a really cool time to be in the music industry, especially where like the major labels are kind of losing a little bit of foothold, and a lot of more independent artists are coming in, or even independent labels too. You know, it kind of sucks when like three companies own the entire music industry. And now yeah, it's the best time in the history of the music industry to be an independent artist.
I just recently interviewed Russ, and he was talking all about that. It was a really dope interview just to see, you know, how far he's grown being an independent artist and following that business model. It just goes to show, really, like, you want to be an independent artist, go for it. You want to be signed to a label, go for it. You want to be an independent label, go for it. You want to be bought out, go for whatever you want to do. There's opportunity. You know, everybody has their preference. It's just a matter of getting the job done.
He's kind of done both of those. Like, he started off, he wrote like 10 albums before he was signed. And then he dropped three albums with his label and then left, and he's cranking out music independently now, and he's doing better than he ever has.
Yeah, and I believe when he does, just wants to do distribution for certain things, he doesn't, but he has it all under his wing right now.
Yeah, and I'm sure that the audience that he built up on his own when he originally got that deal that he had, that label deal,
yeah,
probably didn't get completely screwed like a no-name artist, right? Because he had... Oh, yeah. That backing of like, well, I already have a successful music career.
Right.
I don't need you. You want my money.
Right. Yeah. I'm already making my money. You just see that you can make more by helping me out a little bit. It doesn't mean that I won't be able to do it without you.
Whereas a no-name artist who's very, very talented, the label can come in and say, okay, well, we own you. Like, we'll blow you up, but we essentially own you. You know, yeah. And that sucks.
Yeah. It depends though, you know, because there's a lot of people that aren't built for wanting to do the business. You know what I'm saying? So they're like, you know what? I'm probably going to make less, but I'm not going to do any of that shit anyways. I'm not going to take the time to do it. I'm not going to have the discipline to do it. So just go for it. Yeah, there's people for everything, right? And it's all respectable. It's like being an executive versus being an independent entrepreneur. Just because you work for somebody and they, you know, they dictate whether you go to work or not, you still hold a high position, a very highly regarded and respected position as the person that maybe owns a business. I think they're both fine. I think it's up to preference.
Yeah. But the nice thing is now it's more easy for artists to have a choice and choose to be independent and actually have like a pretty good career. Like before the times of digital advertising, it's like if you wanted to get the word out about your independent music product, like what are you going to do? Buy a television ad or a radio ad? It's going to cost you like $5,000, $10,000, like hire a publicist or whatever. And like, you know, now as an independent artist, even with a $300 a month, like you can actually grow your audience, you know, which is kind of, it's a great time to be an artist.
So you think that somebody that's just starting out maybe doesn't have the craziest budget. If they spend $300 a month on paid advertisements for their music, it's a great starting point, and they should start seeing results if they go down that route.
Like, it's obviously not the best budget in the world to have.
But it's not a lot. Yeah, but
you can. A lot of people I know, and even for a lot of my music, when I was starting off with this, I would plan for I would be dropping a song every month or two, and I'd give each song like a $300 budget. And I have a song that we did no playlisting, no social media. We didn't even post once on Instagram about the song. We just dropped it, ran a $300 ad campaign for it, and it has 500,000 streams now. So it's nice.
You never know where those $300 are going to go, honestly.
Yeah, and it was just a Facebook conversion campaign, and that was the extent of it. And $300, 10 years ago, when it comes to music marketing, what the hell is that going to do for you? Pretty much nothing, And now it's like an artist with $300, and they can just skip going to Starbucks once a day, pretty much, and they can have a good marketing budget where a year out they're going to have a significantly larger audience than what they started with.
Question for you, because I asked you, hey, where would you go if you could just advertise on one platform? Well, you mentioned Meta, Facebook, Instagram, same thing. If you could use Facebook and Instagram to focus on one streaming platform, would that be Spotify at the moment? Right now, we're pretty much September 2022. As of today, you would probably go Facebook, Instagram, and your focus platform would be Spotify.
Yeah, definitely. Because Spotify has the best, one, it has the biggest user base by like a long shot. But two, it has the most discoverability tools built into it. So like Apple does have an algorithmic thing where they will like recommend your music based on users' listening habits. But Spotify has the Release Radar and also Release Radar algorithmic. And they have Discover Weekly and your daily mix and an editorial playlist. And it's a lot like $300 in Spotify will generally get you a lot in free algorithmic stuff where that on Apple won't be like huge. And so at least right now, but I still on my landing page, on my Linktree style landing page, I'll have like Spotify and Apple for a lot of it. And then recently I've started adding just every music service just to see what happens. And what I've noticed is like 85% of people choose to go to Spotify.
Right.
And so that's kind of one reason alone. Like even when I give people every choice of music platform, 85% go to Spotify.
Are you using YouTube Shorts for any of your existing campaigns or existing marketing efforts for music artists?
No, actually, YouTube Shorts. So, I mean, I've tried posting shorts on my YouTube channel, like my main YouTube channel, and they just don't really do that well. And I think it might just be the people on YouTube, or for at least in my demographic, are looking for longer form content. Whereas when I post those same, because for my Andrew Southward channel that covers music marketing, music business, the shorts do pretty bad, like way worse than a regular video, like by like a factor of 10. Wow. And then
because yours is like educational content, longer form content. They got to sit down and go through it, look through it. It's not just like quick,
But when I post that same stuff on TikTok, it's like, I mean, in the past like 5 months, I've gotten like 77,000 followers on TikTok. So it's not huge, but like, the videos do reasonable. They do much better on TikTok than shorts. And I think is like people will consume education content on TikTok, and they also have longer time limits than YouTube shorts. YouTube shorts is a minute. TikTok is three. Yeah. YouTube is one and TikTok's three, but they're upping it to 10 soon, which is crazy.
It's going to change the platform a lot. Yeah.
It's going to. And so like YouTube shorts for music, I haven't had actually posted music content. I usually tell people like, you're going to make a video for TikTok and for Instagram Reels. Instagram Reels also, like for me, I found it does much better than when I post that same video on TikTok. That might just be my audience. But like I would say, like for most people, you're going to make that video anyways. Just post it to all three.
Yeah.
It's not going to hurt you.
No. Definitely not going to hurt you. Andrew, listen, we've come to the end of our episode, but I would love to have you back soon. This has been one of my favorite conversations. I love your experience. I love everything that you're working on, man. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit here and chat with us. And everybody listening right now, thank you guys so much for supporting the podcast. We're going on year 3. We have a ton of you guys listening in, over 100 countries right now. Very excited about that. Thank you so much, guys, for supporting us. Make sure to leave a review. Make sure to hit us up on social medias. Hit up Andrew. You know, we're going to link up all his social medias. Ask him any questions related to music marketing, to marketing your business, specifically in the music industry. He has a ton of experience. He's helped me. He's helped my agency. So we could definitely vouch for his experience and his work. If you guys have any questions for me, podcast related or marketing related, make sure to shoot them my way on all my social medias. Make sure to look out for me. And no, do not follow any of those fake profiles. You'll see me verified on most social medias except on Instagram. Find me on Instagram, Alex Quinn. Andrew, where can they find you?
If they just type in on YouTube, Andrew Southworth, and on Instagram and TikTok, Andrew Southworth, I'll come up. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one.
Couldn't be easier.
Yeah.
All right, y'all.
This was fun.
Catch you on the next episode.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Hustle Inspires Hustle podcast. I'd appreciate it if you could share, leave a review, and subscribe to the show. Visit hustleinspireshustle.com/app for more free resources, event invitations, and online courses to empower your personal and financial success. Learn about marketing, finances, business development, branding, strategic partnerships, and much more. If you're looking to further connect, check me out on Instagram or LinkedIn at Alex Quinn. That's AlexQuinn. See you on the next episode.